Thank you. I hope you all enjoyed your break in the exhibit hall. It was sponsored by Bell Labs. Thank you very much for that. Our next speaker, his name is Pepe Pierro, and he's the founder and CEO of J&K Canine, based out of High Springs, Florida, and it was established in 1996. He's retired from law enforcement in early 1998, and he's been involved in the scent detection in the field of entomology since 1997, first with termite detection dogs and later on with bedbug detection dogs. Noticing a significant deficiency in pest control industry programs, he has dedicated over 15 years of research and development with universities including Florida, Kentucky, Tennessee to improve detection methods and efficiency. Pepe is the leader in developing research data in the field of canine scent detection for entomology and is currently involved with the USDA to develop scent detection programs for the field of agriculture. He has a strong commitment to environmental friendly initiatives, and it is my pleasure to welcome Pepe to the stage.
Who let the dogs out?
Well, good morning. How's everyone doing today? Good. Well, I want to thank you for the invitation, and I appreciate the opportunity to come up here. I was also delayed on that that fog that we had yesterday, 4 hours in Washington. So we do appreciate, and it was always a scary thing when you're landing and you can't see the actual wing tip on your plane. So that was pretty scary. And hopefully today we'll have better weather because I do have to fly out today. So. We're going to talk a little bit today about some information I think is important. Before we get started, I want to tell you that most of the time when people see a dog trainer or a dog program, the first thing they're expecting to see is a dog and pony show, you know. And before we get started, I want to make sure that you guys understand that that is my dog and pony show right there. That's the extent of it. I'm not here to sell dogs. I'm here to give you information on the history of canine scent detection in the field of entomology. The name of my talk is The Rise and Fall. And this is important because what you're going to get is a history, real brief Reader's Digest version of the history of canine scent detections in the field of entomology. Canada is probably a lot like the West Coast. You're probably about 3 or 4 years behind New York. It's coming. Things are changing. Bed bugs has transformed pest control. Is there anybody here that doesn't agree with that? I tell people bed bugs is what crack was to law enforcement. It changed the entire dynamics of what you did out on the street. Before, you could get to a place, somebody said, hey, I had some roaches, I had some different things. You spray, you pray, you leave, you take care of some different things. Now, you can no longer be just a PCO. You've got to be a motivational speaker. You've got to be a consultant. You've got to be a psychologist. Because when someone calls you, they're not just calling you up and saying, I've got a bug and it's in my house. They're saying, my husband left me. We've spent over $60,000 in treatments and we can't get rid of it. My children haven't seen their grandparents in a year because they won't let us come and visit. This has transformed your industry. You, as an industry, are able to transform what you've done and develop your programs around it. We're here to talk about dogs. And the reason we want to talk about history is if we don't understand it, we're inevitably doomed to repeat it. Dogs have been around for about 30 years. We know that. How many of you here remember the TAD dogs that came out years ago, termites? Long time ago, people were using dogs. Dogs have been used in a variety of different insects. But the biggest issue when I came on in 1998 was there was no significant studies. Nothing. I could grab a dog from the pound, show up at your house and say, this dog finds termites. Give me $350. And people were doing it. So I came in and I looked at the programs, and I said, you know, I'm willing to participate in training a dog for a particular company, but I've got to be able to have some research. I've got to be able to support what I say, because I'm not going to catch myself in court and have somebody say, well, how does your dog find termites? I can't give them an answer like, well, it's like a thermos. How does it know to keep warm things warm and cold things cold? I don't know. You can't give them that kind of an answer. You have to be able to give them data, support, scientific. So when we looked at some of the companies and some of the issues that they were having was that there was a lack of research and consistent performance created environmental skepticism. I spoke to somebody last night. I came in, introduced myself. I said, I'm Peppy. And they said, oh, you're the dog guy. I'm a little bit skeptical. My answer was, you should be. You should be very skeptical. You're going into something that even though it's been around in your industry for many years, it is still in its pioneer stage. And the pest control industry doesn't know how to deal with dogs. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a second. A lot of the companies purchased dogs that didn't work. So they were $7,000 pets, expensive marketing tools. And they loved them, and it's great. There was also no regulatory or certifying body. How do you know your dog works? It does. Well, who says it does? Because I say it does. Well, who else says it does? My trainer, he says it does. And my mom, I got a letter from my mom, she says it does. Okay, it doesn't work that way. We need something more than that. The trainers were not held accountable. This is the most incredible part of this entire puzzle for me. You have an industry that for many years was dictated to by your trainers. Your trainers told you what you needed. Well, you got to have a dog that does this. Why? How does that work? So I'm looking at dogs in the termite industry that were alerting on damaged wood, fraz, pellets, fungi, carpenter ants. And people said, well, yeah, it's what they do. Well, no. What do you need? Well, we need a dog that just finds live termites. So what we developed was a dog that found just live termites. Scam alert was all over the dog industry when I came in. All over it. Everywhere. If it's a dog, it's a scam. Don't use them. They're terrible. We want to avoid that in the bed bug world. We can avoid that by achieving higher standards and by being able to give support to everything that we say and do through academics. In 1998, we did our extensive research. I got into it. I thought it was going to be a three-month research project. I was really happy. Met a guy at the university, former Navy SEAL, Sean Brooks. He said, yeah, we're going to do research on termite detection dogs. Figured that's great. 3 years later, we're wrapping up our research. We developed the program where dogs only detected live bugs. They didn't detect the wings. They didn't detect fraz, pellets, damaged wood, nothing. Throughout those 3 years, we were putting out information. Every single trainer out there said it cannot be done. I remember watching Dr. Kaler from the University of Florida stand on a stage one day and give a talk. And the trainer stood up and said, that's impossible. He said, but I have the data right here. We've got data on 7 or 8 dogs. Well, it can't be done. But we've already tested the dogs. It can't be done. So a lot of conflict was occurring in the industry. So we needed to make some changes. 2001, the research was presented at Pest World in Louisiana. Kind of interesting that, you know, we just had the Pest World in Louisiana again. But I was the new kid on the block. I stood at a table, new trainers, new people, stood there with Sean Brooks and Dr. Kaler and Dr. Faith Oy and presented our findings. And at the time I said, you know, we need to do something. And what we need to do is we need to set up an organization that will regulate the dog industry. Well, that was one of these moments right here, okay? That was a bummer because I shouldn't have said that. Everybody said you're going to regulate us out of the industry. This is ridiculous. We don't need regulations. We can take care of ourselves. My response was do it or the government's going to come in and do it for you later down the road. So set your standards high. The recommendation fell on deaf ears. Nothing happened. Nobody wanted to. There was no national industry organization that wanted to. Nobody even wanted to get involved. One individual said, we already have an organization. I thought, that's great. Let's all join your organization. There was no organization. It was non-existent. It was a shell. It happened. We went through that year. A year later, I turned around and I said to three pest control guys that I knew, you guys need to make up a decision. I'm not going to sell any more dogs in the field of entomology because there's no position for us to be in and be protected legally when we're putting our programs together. So you have a choice. Put your money up, form an organization, and start regulating the dog industry. Start moving in that direction. 2003, the National Entomology Scent Detection Canine Association was formed. That's NSDECA. There was other organizations that since have been formed and were formed around that time, the WDDO, IAOCPI. You can look up these on the internet. The idea was to form organizations that should be theoretically third party. Now, NSDECA is run by pest control operators. It's actually, the board is made up of PCOs from across the country. Until that point, people were certifying their own dogs. So a trainer would sell you a dog, X amount of money, take that dog out, give you a test, and you pass the test. People were happy with that. The problem is that when you go to court and someone says to you, well, who trained your dog? You know, trainer A. Well, who certified your dog? Trainer A. There's a conflict of interest there, folks. There is a direct conflict of interest when someone sells you a product and then certifies you to be able to use that product in some cases. Quality Pro is one of those organizations that, you know, comes out and says, we're going to test your company individually. There's a lot of other programs that you're starting to see move in that direction. That was the turning of the tide. I'm going to show you this real quick. You look at these photos here. Is there anyone that looks at these photos and doubts the validity of those dogs? Raise your hand if you doubt the validity of those dogs. None. Law enforcement, military, customs, search and rescue. No doubt, they work. What's the difference between those dogs and dogs in the field of entomology? Standards, research, data. The U.S. military did a 6-year study, spent $19 billion to determine that the best detection tool in the field of explosives and narcotics was a dog. Is the dog the silver bullet? No. Is the dog going to find every single insect in a room? No. Can a dog miss? Absolutely. Can a dog walk into a room that's heavily infested and walk out and not give you an indication? Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk about that. Is it the best detection tool in the market? Yes, it is. Is it for every company? No, it's not. The industry has to look at the way you implement dogs and see if it works. We're going to compare these so that you understand the comparison. Entomology compared to law enforcement, search and rescue, and military. The source is greatly different, okay? By that I mean that we're looking and we're following and trying to locate something that breathes. I was at a conference in Philadelphia, and a gentleman stood up and he said, there's a failure in your program. I said, all right, well, let's hear it because I love to learn. He says, you're using these vials to hide your bugs in, and there's no airflow in it. It's just a vial. And you only have one area where the air comes out of. You've got to have airflow. In explosives and narcotics, we have airflow. So I listened to him, heard him all out. Gentleman comes up to me afterwards. He says, he made a lot of sense, Pepe. What's your answer? I said, well, ask him, go back and ask him this. When you take black powder and you put it in a vial, and you take cocaine, you put it in a vial, and you seal it up so there's no air in there at all, what happens to it? Nothing. Because it's not alive. Bed bugs breathe, and they move. They create their own airflow. I don't need airflow coming through the vial. So when you have the training concept of just narcotics and bombs, you're limited. You have to look at what exactly you're looking for. We are always questioning what the dogs do, and we want to know why. We just did a research project with USDA where we trained dogs to detect citrus canker. They've tried for 7 years. They weren't able to do it. It took us about a year. We were able to produce some dogs. Dog goes out into the field. The dog performs at 99% accurate in a grove with 1,000 plants. 1% miss ratio, one false alert. You know what the science says to me? I just don't know, Peppy, because the dog is smelling the stem of the plant and the virus is on the leaf. You know, what do you think it is? I said, we're going to have to ask the dog because I have no idea. Why are we questioning it? If the dog is still able to give you those high accuracy, maybe the research is skewed. Maybe the virus doesn't have just something to do with the leaf. Maybe it has something to do with the stem itself. The dog can identify the difference. He's accurate. He's not missing. So again, we have to look at it from a perspective of seeing, you know, things from a different perspective instead of just what we're looking at. So research is very important. The scope of the inspections is different. When you look at dog training and dog handling, and I'm not here to criticize one program over the other, but when you're looking at a dog program, you have to look at the dynamics of the environment that you're searching in. If I'm searching a vehicle on the side of the interstate, I can afford to go ahead and present and point that vehicle all throughout because it's one vehicle. And does anyone know why dog handlers do this with their dogs? That concept came out of working with vehicles where you want that dog to follow the seam of the vehicle. That's the areas where the odor is going to come out of. Dog doesn't have to smell the side of a van. There's no air going to, no scent going to come out of there. Tell that dog handler to searches one or two vehicles that way, to search every vehicle in the mall. Tough. You got to change the way you're searching. Because we're not searching one or two vehicles. We're not searching an apartment. We're searching hundreds of rooms. In order to achieve that, you have to change the dynamics of how you're searching. That makes it applicable. The training environment and supported by management. This is critical. When you have a dog program in the military and in law enforcement, it's a dog program. It's funded. That's your job. Your job is to work your dog. I remember when I was on the road working a dog, we had a new lieutenant that came on board. He wanted to make everything fair to everybody. So he said, everybody's got to handle accidents in your own zone. So the dog guy didn't work a zone. He just floated everywhere. So the dog guy's going to work a zone too. All right, that's fair. The first night that I'm out doing an accident, some guy bails out of a car, starts running and screaming, and everybody's screaming to get a dog up there. I'm tied up on an accident. That was the last day I worked an accident. Why? It doesn't work. It's a different mechanics. So when you're putting things together, you have to look at the environment and the support. The majority of pest control business models don't fit with dog models. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a second. So it's important to learn, you know, the entomology field needs to learn from law enforcement and some of the canine histories. Now, I know some people say, you know, Peppy, you go back to law enforcement, you know, that's law enforcement, this is civilian, it's a different world. I don't really know if the pest control industry has invented something that the military and the law enforcement hasn't done. I mean, maybe they know something that military and law enforcement doesn't. But if you've spent more than 6 years and $19 billion doing research, please let me know because I'd love to see the findings of that research. It's important to understand some of the basic fundamentals. This is our problem, folks. This is it, in a nutshell. Incomplete and limited ability to eradicate infestations. Costly callbacks, anxiety in the victims, increased litigation, impact on the environment. This is your problem. This is it. How do we resolve that? How do we as a team work together to resolve this? How do we put things together? How do the dogs fit into your program and your integrated pest management to be able to resolve some of these issues? Well, the dogs help you because there's no room preparation. Now, no room preparation is important, not just because it saves you time, but what else does it save you on? Workman's comp claims? Oh, yeah. Lifting that bed up there, I just wrenched my back. I'm out for 6 weeks. Occupied rooms can be inspected. There's a guest in the room. Luggage is there. I can't tell you how many times dogs have gone in, alerted on luggage, and there's nothing in the room, just on the luggage. So that guest has brought those bugs in. 100 rooms can be inspected per day with one dog and one team. That varies. A more experienced dog, more seasoned dog can do more. I know that there's teams out there, for example, that can do between 2,000 to 5,000 rooms in a week with ample teams, say 4 or 5 teams together. A lot of that has to do with the preparation that's available. All the rooms are open. There's nobody there. Makes life a lot easier. But when you're going through the dynamics of the searches, and part of this is educating your consumer. Multiple teams can be arranged to do more rooms if needed. And it's cost effective as compared to manual inspections. How many people here think that you can thoroughly inspect manually, visually, a hotel room in under 30 minutes and do a thorough inspection? I love Canada. Okay. I've done this talk, I can't tell you how many places, and I've actually had a guy stood up one time and told me that he can give you bugs in a room within seconds of entering the room. If you tell him the make, the model, and the year that the furniture was manufactured, he can tell you exactly where the bed bugs are hiding. This person also smells bugs as he's walking down the street and has actually been able to follow the scent into someone's apartment and been able to eliminate the problem. Let's understand what scent is, because this is where the question comes in all the time. How many of you here have dogs? Have had a dog? All right. How many of you here have ever thrown a ball for a dog? Probably the same amount of people. Dog generally runs out and stops short. Doesn't get all the way out there, just sort of stops halfway and looking for the ball. The reason for this is, unless it's a gaze hound, they generally don't have great depth perception. So he gets a certain point, now he's got to use his nose. So he starts working back and forth, looking for that ball. What he's doing is, he's working that scent cone. So this is your object over here. The scent, the airflow is moving in this direction. It creates an air cone, a scent cone. So that dog works that scent cone. Everything has a scent cone. Everything has an odor. Everything leaves a scent cone. And everything is located by a dog using the scent cone. The importance is, how do you train your dog? How do you imprint your dog on what you want that dog to find? Whether that dog is finding cocaine, a dead body, a bomb, bed bugs, canker, it's going to find it using its nose and using this basic concept. On leash, off leash, doesn't make any difference. If a dog can search on leash, it should be able to search off leash. People always ask, well, how come you tell people to search on leash? Liability. That's it. Can your dog search when it's off leash? Yeah. Search when it's off leash. I've heard trainers say, if your dog doesn't search off leash, it's not a good dog. If your dog is searching on leash, you're cueing your dog. Every drug arrest in the U.S. that's done on the side of the interstate would be thrown out if that were true. Because there's not one dog handler that searches a vehicle on the side of the interstate without their dog on a leash. Doesn't happen. Dog runs out on the street, gets killed. It's a dog. It's going to chase things. It's going to be motivated. It's going to be focused. Keep those things in mind. Understanding scent. Scent doesn't just work in this direction. It also works in this direction. Because here's the question we always get. Well, what if it's in a smoke detector? Okay, what if it's in a smoke detector? Scent has to move. There's airflow in that room. When it hits that smoke detector, it's going to blow that scent down into the dresser area. And that's where that dog's going to give you a change in behavior. And locate it if the dog is properly trained and properly maintained. You're going to hear me say that over and over and over because that's critical. These are the parts that are important. Selecting the right canine. I spoke to a trainer yesterday from California. Called me up. said, hey, look, I'm a trainer. We're training dogs. I want to pick your brain on a couple of, you know, ideas and some advice. We get those calls all the time. So I'm talking to him, and he says, well, tell me this whole beagle thing. Why beagles? I said, well, it's not so much what we want. It's what the consumer wants. Can a German Shepherd do bedbug work? Absolutely. Can a Rottweiler do bedbug work? Absolutely. Are you going to have a higher probability of having somebody allow you into their hotel with a smaller dog? Yeah, absolutely. Why? Perception. That's it. Bottom line, perception. When I say this to him, he says, oh, that's ridiculous. I mean, I've got one small dog, all the other ones are big dogs, but I can't sell them. It's not that the dogs don't work. It's what the consumer is looking for. What happens with a larger dog? Larger crate, more food, shorter lifespan, more health issues, and the perception. That's the biggest thing. When you show up, I had a guy call me up, says, look, I've got a Rottweiler. His dad was a champion. A blue blood champion, drug dog, you know, all these great things. I want you to train my dog. I said, no. He says, come on, you got to train. I mean, I'm going to call another trainer. Well, you call somebody else, but I'm not going to train it. Finally, after about a month or so, I called him, you know, he called up and I called him back and I said, look, I'll tell you what, I'll train your dog, but I need you to sign a waiver saying that I warned you that you're not going to get any work with this dog. So he refused, took the dog to another trainer, got it trained, called me back 6 months later and said, I should have listened to you. I can't land one job. I sell it. When I walk in with the dog, they go, whoa, what's that? Oh, this is my bedbug dog. No, we don't want that dog here. Oh, but it's a sweet dog. It loves everybody. I've got pictures with little kids and everything else. That's great, but I don't want that dog here. Perception. That's not always the case. But as a consumer, that's what you're looking at. The reward system. Well, let's talk a little bit about imprinting. Imprinting is important because it is my belief that when you imprint that dog, and that means what that dog is locked into its brain, what you want it to find, once that dog is imprinted, it's very difficult to undo that imprinting. That doesn't mean that dog won't pick up something else outside of that imprinting, and then you've got to change that or take that out of it. Proofing is what we call it. But the initial imprinting is where the failures come in. Initial imprinting means when I start my dog and it's training, what does that dog first associate with the reward? Whether that's toy, food, praise, whatever. When I started looking at termite dogs, people were taking a bunch of wood with termites in it, throwing it in a can, bringing their dog up, and that's what the dog was being rewarded on. So it alerted on everything. And it wasn't because people were doing it maliciously. It was because of lack of information. I remember having a discussion with a trainer who swore to me that dead termites smell just like live termites. It's the same smell, Peppy. They can't discriminate the difference. I said, really? He says, absolutely. He says, I know this because I took a bottle cap, put a dead termite on it with a piece of tape, and for the last 6 weeks, my dog has been alerting on that dead termite. I said, so what's your dog alerting on? The bottle cap, the tape, or the dead termite? Because we've trained our dogs not to alert on dead termites. So what you initially imprint that dog is going to be absolutely critical. The reward system, toy, food, praise. Let's go over those real quick. It really doesn't make any difference what your dog is rewarded with. The reason we use food reward, or the reason we like food reward, is because it's the easiest transition over to our new handlers. Okay? I use food reward in two disciplines, entomology and medical. Why? Because we use toy reward on everything else that we do. My dog finds dope, good dog, pull on that towel. My dog finds mallard duck eggs, good dog, pull on it. My dog searches a patient, finds cancer, I don't want to go, good dog, find that cancer, it's a good dog. You don't want that. Very low key. Reward the dog and move on. I don't want to be in a 5-star hotel with the door shut, screaming and yelling, good dog, and whipping that dog around as it's hanging on to its towel, you know, to reward it. I want to come in and do something very easy. Toy reward also is a little tougher for the handlers. Civilian handlers don't get as much time. For us to be certified with our dog, we go through 450-hour school for your police dog. 450 hours. Then you get out on the street and you start training every 2 weeks with a group, but you're training every day with your dog. So what you're using shouldn't matter as long as you're consistent. There has to be a direct correlation between the find and the reward. Has to be. You'll have some people say, well, you know, I reward my dog sometimes and sometimes I don't. Really? Why? Well, I just want to make sure. And I want you to, I'm going to give you an example so you see that this is not just a civilian market. I was giving a lecture to law enforcement, and I had a guy stand up and say, well, you know, we don't reward our dogs on the street. My dog alerts on narcotics. We search the vehicle. And then if we find the drugs, then we bring the dog back over to the car, search it again, and then we reward him. I said, well, why do you do that? He says, well, we want to make sure we don't reward him on a false alert. And everybody in the room is going like, yeah, that's good. I said, all right. Well, let's play devil's advocate here. I'm an attorney. So I'm going to ask you a quick question. So how do you train your dog? The answer is, well, my dog searches a vehicle. It finds narcotics. It gives me the alert, and I reward the dog. Awesome. That's fantastic. So in this particular case, you stop my client for probable cause, search his vehicle. Your dog alerted. You rewarded it. Then you get inside the vehicle, and you search it. No, I didn't reward him. Okay. I'm confused. How does that work? Well, he alerted, but then I searched the vehicle to make sure there was drugs in there. Then I brought him back, and he alerted, and then I rewarded him. Okay, so you entered my client's vehicle using a probable cause that you're not even comfortable that it works. So the case gets thrown out. Why are you going to use a dog if you're doubting your dog? Use it. Keep it trained. Keep it maintained. You have to make sure that you understand our brain, what we see and what we think is not necessarily what the dog is doing. We did a search and rescue seminar down in Naples. Woman brings her dog out, searches 5 acres. She's searching and searching and searching. And her dog goes down by the pond and starts working around the water, and she calls her dog back and sends it out into the woods. Dog comes back to the pond. So this is a cadaver dog. It's looking for human remains. So it's working along the edge of the pond. She calls it back and sends it out into the woods again. By the third time, the dog comes back to the pond and sits. She calls the dog, no, come on. I said, stop. I said, what's your dog's alert? She says, well, he sits. I said, is it possible that your dog is alerting on the water? And this is true now. This is exactly what she said. She said, well, it can't be because he's not water certified. In her mind, since this dog wasn't water certified, it couldn't find dead bodies in the water. Well, actually, there was. There was source, human remains source in the water. So again, in her mind, it couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. Field applications. If your dog is not field ready, is not ready to work out in the field, if you're going through a course or you get your dog and all it can do is, you know, do like a little wheel or do a couple of stations or something like that, and that's the extent of your training, then there's some issues. You need to have a dog that before it gets to you has already been out in the field working, has some field experience to be able to know that it can work in those environments. Here's where we start getting some questions and some people looking at me funny. We're using a highly superior system of inspection. We know it works. We know it's fine-tuned. When it works properly, it works absolutely great. But we want to verify it with a less efficient tool, our human eye. Some PCOs, we talked about that. Some PCOs blog, you hear them on the blog all the time in New York. You know, I find, you know, bugs 98% of the time. I find them more than dogs. I come in behind dogs and I find bugs all the time. Some even go as far as saying that they can smell them down the street and follow these things. These guys are looking for bed bugs. They're, you know, tearing things apart and trying to go up underneath there and look at it. But this is what we're looking for. So when we go back to this one right here, My question is, when someone says to me, show me the bugs, your dog alerted, show me the bugs, are we going to find the bugs every single time? No. Now, certain rules, certain regulations, certain standards say you can't treat unless you have a visual confirmation or some kind of evidence. I understand that. But these dogs aren't here to detect large infestations. The dog is a tool to find those low-level infestations, which means you treated, the dog comes in to validate your treatment, the dog finds something, maybe left behind, an egg, a nymph, treat that again, bring the dog back in to validate, or your client says, I think I'm being bit, you run the dog through and there's nothing there. So it validates what you have going on in the location that you're searching. But it's important to understand this, because part of what you have, if you apply the same philosophy that we see in pest control, which is the dog alerted on the bed and we can't see anything, so that's a false alert. It's a false alert. Okay. Well, let's take that same concept and apply it to our borders. A truck comes through the border, my border dog searches the vehicle and alerts on a truck. So I bring the dog over, and my border patrol, who was a PCO tech just a week earlier, walks up to the truck, shines his flashlight on it, walks around the truck, looks inside, opens the dashboard, looks under the seat, looks in the back, checks all the edges, doesn't see anything, says, send it on through. No, it's not what happens. What happens on the border? Dog alerts, bring it in, x-ray it, rip out the seats, drain out the gas tank. We'll find the dope. It's in there. Why? Because they trust their dogs. Because their programs are set up to validate what their dogs do. Because their standards are high. I had somebody tell me a couple years ago, your standards are too high. I agree we need to bring our standards up. Bring yours down so we can meet in the middle. Is that ridiculous? We have that. People actually think, I can't achieve that. Why can't you achieve it? You can achieve these goals, but you have to work. The standard has to be there. The industry, pest control industry, needs to realize that in order to get that higher standard, that comes with a price. Time, finances. You've got to be able to manage the people, which is different. Keeping it simple, stupid, the KISS theory. Single discipline. I'm going to open this up to questions at the end so we have plenty of time to answer questions. But I want to address this issue really quick. When people talk about dual discipline dogs or dogs that find multiple odors, there's always that question. And that was one of the questions that occurred early on with bed bug detection dogs. So the question was, can my dog find termites, bed bugs, mold and bed bugs, narcotics and bed bugs? Sure, it can do it. Can you train a dog to do that? Absolutely. Is it feasible to do that? No. The military years ago experimented with this, and so did the law enforcement, to say, let's save money. Let's take a bomb dog. We'll make him lay down on bombs. We'll make him sit on narcotics. Everybody said, that's awesome. We're going to save a ton of money. Periodically during training, the dog would sit on a bomb and lay down on drugs. So people started realizing, maybe that's not a good idea. Because the last thing you want to do is there drugs in that? Is there drugs in that suitcase? Kick it across the room and it blows up. So again, what you want to be able to do is understand what it is that you're searching. I can search for something and train my dog for multiple odors if all of those things have the same result. If I search a vehicle, my dog finds marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine. When I search that vehicle and you ask me what's in that vehicle, I'm going to say dope. I'm not going to say, well, I think it's heroin, or I think it's marijuana. I'm going to say it's dope. The end result is the same anyway. But when your dog alerts on something and you don't know if it's a bed bug or termite, what's your answer? Well, I think it's termites. I think it's that. I actually had somebody this was in a conference call with academics, actually say that if the dog alerts on a wall, it's termites, and if the dog alerts on furniture, it's bedbugs. That statement in and of itself is beyond belief, but that's what people believe. So if you sell that to someone, if I go to you as an industry and I say to you, look, if a dog alerts on a wall, it's going to be termites, and if a dog alerts on furniture, it's going to be bedbugs, and you take it as the gospel, how can we ever achieve that higher goal? Because that information is completely bogus. How many of you here ever found bedbugs in walls? How many of you ever found termites in furniture? We have it all the time with drywood termites. We actually did a brand new building on South Beach that had imported all of their furniture from China. They had 3/4 of the building completely furnished. They were opening up in 2 months, and they discovered drywood termites. So we had to go in and search all of their furniture. We found 2 other locations where the termites had come in. So again, there is an application for it, but in the field of entomology, it just doesn't work. Single discipline, keep it simple. My dog alerts. This is what it looks for. It doesn't look for anything else. It's the only thing it finds. Very basic. Certifications and hands-on workshops. How many of you here have ever taken a CEU or any kind of a certification test or anything and failed it in the field of entomology? So when your handler goes out and gets a dog and goes and takes his canine certification and fails, that's new to you. That's unacceptable. I've had people call up the phone and say, I just spent a ton of money on my dog and my dog failed certification. And your team failed certification. When you look at certifications out there, certification organizations, and they have 0 failure rate or they have a 1% failure rate, or something like that, something's going wrong. A basic test should be whether that dog can find odor, and 2, whether that handler can identify if that dog is finding odor. That's a basic test. Simple. Nothing more complicated than that. It needs to be real-world environment. It needs to be in the field where you're going to be actually working, and test your dog. It's critical for the parties that get their dogs to be able to communicate with the trainers all the time. The biggest failure in the field of entomology is the lack of communication between trainers and the dog handlers. We're in the world of technology. How can you not get a hold of your trainer? You should be able to contact your trainer. Those first 6 months that your dog comes to you, regardless of who you get your dog from, those first 6 months are crucial. That's your baby steps time. You need to be able to pick up the phone at any time and say, I'm on the job right now. My dog is standing here looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and we don't know what to do. Talk me through this. In our case, we use video conferencing 24/7. You got an iPhone, we're going to be talking to you. Some of my people are here, and you know, it's something that we do, and we've had those calls. 2:00 in the morning, I'm at a movie theater, my dog's looking at me, and I'm looking at him. All right, put your phone on. Yeah, I can see him, he's looking at you. All right, do this, do that, change it, do this. Okay, now it's working, okay, good. Call me if you have any other problems. That type of communication is crucial. Again, hold the trainers accountable for what they say and what they do. I'm stunned at the stories that I hear when people talk to me. Well, hold the person accountable. Well, you know, I mean, just, oh my gosh. Hold people accountable for what they say and what they do. And I guarantee you this industry will change. Hands-on workshop versus CEUs. Sitting down and talking about dog handling is great. But if you're not doing it, if you're not hands-on and I'm not getting to see that dog work, we ran a seminar in Maryland. We had dogs from 7 different trainers there. They got to bring their dogs. We got to work with dogs. We got to see people work their dogs. Those that had dogs from our organization, from other organizations. And we got to learn from each other. We got to be able to experience new things. I had someone say to me, you know, my dog doesn't work around other dogs. really. So we lined up about 7 or 8 rows of chairs with about 3 feet in between them, and I had 15 dogs zigzagging those chairs back and forth. By the end of it, she says, well, I guess my dog can work around other dogs. Yeah, but you got to test it. You've got to be able to put that into play. If we create a complicated testing process, where does it stop? Recently, there was an approach that someone had that said, well, we're going to test dogs in office buildings, give you a certification for office buildings, we'll give you a certification for residents, and we're going to give you a certification for multifamily housing. Okay. So you're going to test our dogs for 3 days and see if they can work in all those areas there, and you know, it's a pass or fail type of thing. And I'm going to pay you, what, $1,500? Okay. So why stop there? Why not certify the dogs on males and females? Why not certify our dogs, if you're going to travel outside of Connecticut, that the dog can find bed bugs from Boston or Pittsburgh? Why not do that? Why not certify that your dog can work in the wintertime and, you know, in the summertime? Where do we stop? And then, as an industry, are we going to hold the techs? Because I guarantee you, as an attorney, the first thing I'm going to do if a certification like that pops up is I'm going to say, well, this is good enough for dogs. What about your technician? Is he certified in multifamily housing? So he's not. So how is he spraying that? So what happens is people get caught up in these ideas, which in reality are not bad ideas, but they're just not applicable. Okay. This is why it's not applicable. The pest control industry, the models of pest control industry is driven by finances. Bottom line, you want to provide the best service for your client, but at the end of the day, you want to make a living. Period. That's it. The government, as we all know, doesn't care about the money. So, where do we see the changes? Let's give you some comparisons. We know that the canines require a significant amount of time and commitment. Not just in handling the dog. You got to train it. When everybody goes home at the end of the day and has a beer, you got to go home and walk that dog, make sure he takes a poop, make sure you bathe him because he's got to be clean for the next day. That's commitment. True certifications are not a give me. You send your dog off to get certified and that dog fails, you got to deal with that. It's not a give me. That's different. In law enforcement, you pull the dog off the road. He trains for 2 weeks. He goes back out and takes the test again. You don't do that in the pest control. The handler should be compensated for their time. You got to compensate them. Now you got the rest of the crew saying, I'm working 40 hours. This guy's working 32 hours. You know, yeah, but he goes home. He's got to bathe that dog. He's got to do all these other things. The initial startup cost is much greater than the dog. Does anybody know what the initial startup is of a dog bringing a dog into a company? Yeah. On an average, between $80,000 to $100,000 to bring a dog into a program. You've got vehicle, you've got salaries, you've got insurance, you've got the purchase of the dog and all of these things. And then number 5, the turnover rate in the pest control industry is high. How many of you here have dogs? How many of you here have lost a handler and had to replace them? Okay? It's a problem, especially when it happens 2 months or 3 months after he goes down here, spend all that money and certify him, then the guy doesn't work out. I decide I'm going to do something else. These are very, very important. Because you can't pass on that dog to somebody else. It's not like a flashlight or anything else. You've got to now train that person. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between pest control and military. I'm going to give you 2 scenarios. The first scenario is you're in Fallujah, Afghanistan. We're on a convoy that's supposed to leave our base at 4 o'clock in the morning. But it's held up for 4 hours. Not because of fog in Toronto, but it's held up for 4 hours because an IED dog alerted on a road. So the patrol's out there, and they're checking the road to make sure there's no bombs on the road. 4 hours later, they give us the okay, no bombs found, the convoy takes off. How many people in that convoy are sitting there going, that damn dog false alert again? Golly, man, these dogs false alert all the time. No, they don't. They don't do that. Because they know chances are someone touched something that was explosive or gunpowder and went in there and put something down on the road or touched something, touched a rock, did something. They trust the dog. How many times have you guys gone in when a dog is alerted, looked at it, walked out and said, that's a false alert, I can't find anything? It happens all the time. I actually had a company come in, tell me they hired a dog, subcontract. Dog went in and alerted. They said, we got a problem. They said, the dog alerted on 11 rooms out of 26. I thought, that's a lot. And this hotel had a problem. I thought, that's a lot. And I said, well, what's the problem? He says, well, we went in manually, and we only found 8 of the rooms had bugs out of the 11. So we're concerned that the other 3 are false alerts. I said, really? Yeah. I said, well, did you slice the mattresses open? Did you pull the upholstery off the furniture? Well, no, we're not going to do that. Well, then how do you know? My response was, put the manager of the hotel on. I'll tell him to go ahead and slice those open. You look for them. If you don't find them, I'll replace the mattresses. Oh, no, we don't want to do that. Well, don't tell me that it's a false alert. You found 8 out of the 11, and the other ones you can't find, it could be low-level infestations. It could be a nymph. It could be one egg. So again, we as an industry have to be able to understand that. Why have you not understood that? It's simple. For years and years and years, you have been bombarded with misinformation. You have been given information that, for all you know, it could be snake oil. So you reach a point of being skeptical. I don't believe in dogs. I mean, they're great. I mean, I love them. Got a lab myself. Love dogs. Yeah, they're really cute or whatever. It's not going to work for us. So again, why and how do we change that? How do we change the industry? There's a lot of things that the dog can do. The dog can help us go green. Everybody wants to be green. Everybody wants to be green. Everybody wants to change. Everybody wants to use integrated pest management. They require less time than a human inspector. You can do more work. Research has proven their ability. Now, this is important. Because a lot of times you'll see guys saying, you know, our dogs are 98% accurate, our dogs are this and that. It's a matter of words. Are the dogs the most accurate tool out there for inspections? I believe so. Is a dog going to go out there and test at 98 or 100% accurate and be that way all the time? No. Can a dog be 90% accurate or 95% accurate in an inspection? Yeah, it can be. So maybe that's what people should be putting on their advertising. Dogs can be, instead of dogs are. Our dogs are. The reality of it is that nothing matters until you're there inspecting and the circumstances that you're faced with. If I walk into a place and it's a hoarder and there's papers piled all over the place where you're never going to see the floor, that's not a perfect environment to search. It's not. If I walk into a place and the windows are open and there's air blowing everywhere and ceiling fans are going on, that's not an ideal place to search. Am I going to get the best inspection, you know, for that particular room? No. Is the person that I'm working with going to be able to get their money's worth? No, they're not. So we need to be able to communicate that to people, to be able to work with them so they understand that. Field evidence shows that dogs can find one viable egg and versus a non-viable egg, And the canines can continue to become a critical part of integrated pest management. How effective are dogs in the field? There was one study recently done. I believe the study was flawed. So I think there needs to be more research done. We did a research project with Steritech. We did 1,000 rooms that were treated, and we went in and manually checked those same rooms. The miss ratio, that was the purpose of the research, was the miss ratio. The miss ratio was about 0.5%. Part of that was as a result of the dogs not being allowed on the furniture, and that limits it. Client may say, I don't want the dogs on the furniture. You know, you can search my room, but I don't want the dogs on furniture. So that limits them. They have to be educated, you know, towards that. They've got to be told that if my dog doesn't have access to a specific area, we may not be able to get that. This is a monitor. If there's one egg sitting on a corner and there's no airflow in that room where that dog can pick up that scent, it's got to get close to it. But it all depends on the dog and the handler. The initial imprinting, the initial training of that dog, and then it also depends on the continuing education of that dog. I'm of the mindset that a dog needs to be trained every day. Every day. I'm also of the mindset that a working dog is a working dog. And a pet is a pet. Some dogs work absolutely perfect, beautiful. They're a pet one day, and they're a, you know, working dog the next. Some people will say, well, you know, police dogs go home with their owners. Yeah, my dog went home with me, and he hung around my kids. But if I was gone, he went out to the kennel because he was a police dog, and he was trained to bite, and he doesn't know the difference. He's going to get out there and encounter something that he interprets as I've got to bite something, and he's going to bite it because that's what they do. So what we look for is motivation. We look for a good combination between handler and dog to put them out there into the field to be able to address the issues that you have. The canines are not the silver bullet, but I don't think there's anything out there that is a silver bullet. The canine is a tool that you can use in your arsenal against bed bugs, but they're not for every single company. When I say you're 3 or 4 years behind the times, behind New York, you look at New York right now, you look at the U.S. right now, we've got major corporations, big companies, now subcontracting dogs. Why? They're not designed for it. They thought they were. They thought they were 3 years ago when they purchased their dogs. And now they're realizing, you know what? We've got what we've got. That's good. Let's work with that. Let's refine it. Let's keep these dogs working well. But then let's also start subcontracting out because it's a lot of work. It's a whole lot of work. And if you're spread out, and I have one person in this state, one person over here, one person over here, how are they going to train together? They're not. So now it's basically work by trial and error. It's a different mindset. So our job, when I say us, dog trainers, dog handlers, people that handle and work with dogs, our job is to educate both the consumer, and the pest control industry. Your job as PCOs is to hold us accountable for what we say and do. Your job is to say to us, this is what I want. Don't tell me what I want. Okay, this is what I want. That was my wife coming out when I said that, but that's a whole different story there. So the bottom line is, what is it that you want as an industry? And how can I provide that for you? And if what I'm selling you doesn't work, tell me so I can A, get out of the business, or B, change it so that it works for you. At the end of the day, this is a very viable tool, but it will only work if we make some transformations in the industry to start accepting it, and those changes in the industry have to start with the canine handlers and canine trainers level. If we don't change, if we don't look at this from a perspective of the big picture. People always ask me, you know, they always say, well, you know, where do you see yourself 10 years from now? Well, hopefully still training dogs. Hopefully, you know, still being in this industry. You've got to be driven towards the ultimate goal. And the ultimate goal is providing the best service for your customer. And that customer for us, for the dog people, is both the PCO and the consumer. What am I doing on time? We're done? Okay. Real short, three questions. Okay. I'll leave that there for you to think about. Any questions from the audience? Gentleman in the back. So the question is a bed bug similar to narcotics or explosives where the residual odor will be transferred over? The answer is no. The difference is when you've got a bed bug, and people will say, well, you know, the dogs are detecting the pheromones. I'd like to see the studies that show that. We don't know what they're finding. We've done research for 15 years. We don't know if it's pheromones. We don't know if it's the exoskeleton. We don't know what it is. We know that they're finding it. Now, when it comes to bed bugs, we know that because you can take a bed bug that's there, remove that bed bug from there, come back with your dog, and that dog shouldn't alert on her, shouldn't alert in that area, even though that bed bug was there. Not in a vial, actually sitting on that piece of furniture. The other thing is live versus dead. How dead is dead? People say, well, if the bug just died or it died a week ago, the dog could still be because of the pheromones or the odors. No. 2 hours. Bug is dead, 2 hours, dog should not be. That's been proven. Dr. Oi did that study. We went, took some bugs, cooked them up at 120 degrees, brought the dogs back out. We had 7 dogs go through it. By the second hour, none of the dogs were alerting it. Some of the dogs were alerting on it about 30 minutes into it, maybe an hour into it, showed some change in behavior. But by the 2 hours, no interest at all on the bugs. So it is different in that sense where you don't have the residual in those. Okay? Yes. There are certifications. I believe that there's going to be some certifications in Canada. Different organizations do it. But again, what I always encourage people to do is look at the certifications because this is what's important. There are certifications out there right now where you can videotape your dog working and then send that video to somebody to analyze, and then they certify you by watching that video. That's ridiculous. And a certification has to be visible. The evaluator has to be there looking at that dog, watching that dog and that handler work to say yes or no. They should not have a vested interest in that dog. A question was asked recently to... And I'll use this as an example because it's the one that I know, the president of NSDECA. And somebody said, well, are you concerned about improprieties? You know, the evaluators, some of the evaluators are, they're all law enforcement guys, but some of the guys work for one of the trainers. And he said, well, I'm the guy that writes the checks for the evaluators, for their travel expenses and everything else. He says, I failed my certification last year. And I'm the president of NSDECA. So there is no, it either is or it isn't. You pass or you fail. Plain and simple. Yes, sir.
How effective can one dog be after inspecting 100 rooms?
How effective? It really depends on the dog. Are you conditioning your dog? Are you treadmilling your dog when your dog is offline? When it's not working, are you keeping that dog, you know, working? So a lot of it depends on the dog and the activity that you're doing. We have dogs that will do 200 rooms in a day and still be fresh, ready to go. Time? All right. Thank you so much, folks.